Hey guys, and welcome back to Your Brain on Science. Today, I am really, really, really excited to get a series started with you guys. This is kind of my passion project, so we're going to be talking about psychedelics in sports. And now this series is going to explore the utility of psychedelics in sports themselves. So we're going to talk to some former professional rugby players, some professional ice hockey players, and some football players. That's so far the lineup, but we got a ton of people. We got a ton of different sports. And I'm really, really excited to dive in and see how individuals really look to psychedelics to help them in different aspects of their lives, right? Or how psychedelics have given back to them after these sports. Especially right now, I feel like it's a very hot topic with Aaron Rodgers. You know, I'm in Wisconsin right now, and Aaron Rodgers is definitely not in Wisconsin anymore, right? Not with the Packers anymore. But when he had come out with his story about his ayahuasca trips and then having gone on to win two MVP trophies and a Super Bowl after, I think people became very, very interested. And if you're familiar with the psychedelics field, you have probably heard of Mike Tyson's testimony, Lamar Odom's testimony, and those are not the only athletes, right, that have used psychedelics or that have come to psychedelics and that have come to advocate for psychedelics. So I think there's a lot here. There's a lot to explore. And I'm really, really excited to do it with you. So for this first episode, we're going to kick it off with Anna Simons. Anna Simons is quite possibly one of the coolest people I have ever spoken with in my life. And I'm really, really excited for you guys to listen to that episode. So I'll let you jump right in.
I am so excited to introduce to you all Anna Simons. Anna is a retired Women's Premier League rugby player, and her 20-year career includes a USA Division I National Championship, an Australia Premiership championships. I can't even pronounce half these things. First selection and four national championships in the sport of touch rugby. Along with all of this, Anna is a mixed martial artist, which is super, super cool too. And since retiring, she hasn't stopped working. She's now an ambassador for the nonprofit Athletes for Care and Last Prisoner Project and Concussion Legacy Foundation, and is the executive director of the Etheridge Foundation. And we'll get more into this as we sort of chat today, but such an honor to have you, Anna. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so why don't we start off by you telling us a little bit about your sports journey? We have you on as one of our athletes in psychedelics. So maybe tell us about what brought you to rugby and a little bit about your career. I'm very interested.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I have always been an athlete my whole life, since I was a kid. And interestingly, my main sport up until college was soccer. And as a kid, you know, you kind of play all the sports. And so I dabbled in, you know, I played softball. I played basketball a little bit, but pretty unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
I'm tall. So people always like, but I just never took. I liked the sport, but I just never was great at it. But I started to focus on soccer more and more as I got older. And by the time I was in high school, I was playing soccer year round. You know, you have your regular season and then you have travel teams in the other seasons and indoor soccer in the winter and that kind of thing. But, you know, and I ran track too as kind of like a side fun. I didn't really train, yeah, but I just kind of did it. Yeah. Like, yeah, just go run the hurdles, you know?
Yeah.
That changed when I got to college. I had transferred schools after my first year and had, started with the soccer team at my new school. And it wasn't feeling good, you know, the program. But at the same time, I had started hanging out with the rugby teams, the men's and women's teams. And they were so much fun. The rugby girls were like, come hang out, let's go sledding, then we're gonna go get this cookie dessert, you know, and like the soccer girls were pretty just unfriendly, and the whole culture of that program was just like not appealing. And I kind of stuck with it for a bit, and then I was like, you know what, I'm not here to be, you know, why am I putting myself through this? I'm going to quit soccer. So I did, and I started playing rugby. But once I did that, I never looked back. I was like, where has this been my whole life? It just suits me as an athlete, my strengths and my ability so much more than soccer ever did. That's no, shade to soccer. It's just more that I love the contact and I love it being allowed and celebrated in rugby versus, in soccer, you are always trying to be as physical as you can, but within the bounds of what's legal, and the ref, their perception
Yeah,
really like
all
rules
the
the day.
drama
So,
that comes along with that.
yeah, right. And so being like a big, like I'm like 5'11", and like an aggressive, defensive player. It was really frustrating to get penalties, even when I felt like I was legal, my foot's on the ball or whatever. And so to go to rugby where it was so refreshing, like, no, you just tackle someone. Or if you have the ball, they have to tackle you. You can run them over. They have to tackle you. You don't have to. And so it was like this exhilarating, like freedom of a new sport. And so I just fell in love and it took off from there. And so I continued playing. After college, I moved to Portland, Oregon, and played there for a number of years before moving. Just before my final semester of college, I spent time in Australia in Sydney, where I played for the Rats, the Warringah Rats on the northern beaches.
Nice.
So that was amazing. I still have, yeah, really good friends over there, and that was like a really, it was just an incredible experience. And to go to a country where rugby is known, it's
Wow.
known and
Oh my God, yeah.
celebrated, and it's so much more developed than in the US. So I continued playing with my team based out of Portland, ORSU, the Oregon Sports Union. And when the Women's Premier League was formed in 2009 was the first year. It was the top eight teams from around the country, and it was by invite. And so we were sort of like the underdogs in it, but we had some really good competitive years. And then the league expanded to 10 teams. And then since COVID, now it's all scrambled and they're sort of rebuilding. Some teams dropped out, new ones joined. But, playing within that top tier of teams throughout the country. Right up until, yeah, right into the pandemic. And at that point, I'd turned 40. I got like one last hurrah, partial season in, but I'd also moved to Hawaii where I live now. So I couldn't keep playing for my team, and really it was kind of it was like one of those life decisions that it was good all around, because how do I get myself to stop playing? I love it, but my body at this point and my brain really probably don't need any more contact like that. So moving was kind of a multi-purpose solution, and
One of the best places to move to, I would argue.
is a wonderful place. It's definitely a particular lifestyle. I live kind of in the country, so if you're like a real city person and you want all those amenities, you might not like it. But for me, it's pretty great.
Awesome. So you've been an athlete your whole life, right? So where did MMA come into this?
Oh yeah. So that was like my side sport for a few years. About, I guess it was about 10 years ago, I was going through some life things. Like I was going through a divorce, and I had a rugby teammate who had done MMA for several years and was like, "Oh, come to the gym with me, come check it out." And that was another thing where I just tried it and I was like, "Oh, this really suits me. I like this. This is a great outlet." And so I started training and trained for a couple years, had a couple fights, and really liked it. But I was already in my early mid-30s, and that's pretty late to be starting a new career in a contact sport, especially with all the technique that you need to learn, and then balancing that with still playing rugby and competing at that level. So I still consider myself a beginner in all the different techniques. So, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, wrestling, boxing, like all the different things that you study. But I absolutely loved it, and I still love martial arts.
Oh, God.
Even though, yeah, even though I wasn't able to really have a fighting career at all, that's okay, you know?
That was just another one of your like side sports that you did, which is incredible to say. That's so cool. Okay, so you've done all of these contact sports, right? Almost your entire life. Well, not almost your entire life.
Adult life,
Yeah, your
yeah.
entire adult life. So, you know, as an athlete, the use of drugs, I guess other than alcohol and then, you know, the myriad of opioids that you could be prescribed as things sort of happen to you in these contact sports. You know, the use of drugs is highly stigmatized and there's a lot of stigma. Not only is there a lot of stigma, but there's a lot of like clear consequences with the use of drugs, especially things like cannabis, right? We know there's a lot of strict rules with drug testing and so on and so forth. So tell us how you began your journey with plant medicines, because I know that's sort of been your big thing and that's sort of how you got into this field. What brought you to plant medicines?
Yeah, well, I think it really developed over the years as a therapeutic approach. When I was younger, it was more just like, oh, we're having fun, we're going to try some things. And I honestly wasn't that wild as far as things that I tried, I think, compared to, other people I know. But I did try cannabis when I was like a young teenager. And so I kind of knew that it wasn't as bad as it was being made out to be. You know what I mean? Like, as far as my own personal experiences, I was like, well, this doesn't seem dangerous. Whereas drinking, the first time I ever drank, I mean, in high school probably, yeah, it was like, seeing people get sick from that and like binging, poisoning ourselves. It was like, wait a minute. That's
There's so much like
seems
misinformation.
pretty,
Yeah, like both
yeah.
ways, right? Like alcohol makes you so sick, but it's somehow more acceptable. But things like
Yeah.
and plant medicines don't do that. But so much,
Yeah.
you know, cloud. It's very cloudy, like to understand that.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And honestly, I would say we have this like very, it's like a cultural brainwashing.
Yeah.
It's so good that we think it's our own natural choice. Oh no, I love to have a drink. I love to have, a few drinks. I look forward to it. I love it. It's like that was me when I was younger. And but when I really, at a certain point, as I got older and I started going through like, when I was training MMA and playing rugby, I was training pretty intensely all the time. And I was really focused on my body composition because MMA is a weight class sport. And so, calories were a bigger issue. Like empty calories were a waste for the goals that I had, which, alcohol is empty calories. And not to mention it's inflammatory, so it took me until my early to mid 30s to really start using cannabis strategically, noticing, oh, wait a minute, this isn't just like a fun, goofy thing, watch a movie and eat some snacks. It like, oh, this is easing my pain and this is helping me sleep well and recover so I can train hard again tomorrow. And so I started really using like microdose edibles to sleep. I had a friend that would make fake cookies and things, and
Stuff,
I was like,
yeah.
have a little nibble, and it was, and then so I started to really understand and shift my understanding of cannabis. And then I also had a friend who went through a bone marrow transplant and used cannabis medibles, as he called them, for his recovery. And he really credits that with helping him, because he had to do chemo and beforehand for months. And it was just like, witnessing that the medical power of this plant that's so powerful, but it was so gentle to the body compared to all these other pharmaceutical things that you could be prescribed. And like you said, I have been for like over the years, all the different injuries, prescribed heavy duty anti-inflammatories, muscle relaxants, painkillers,
Like sleep
you
meds, like
name
everything,
it.
right? Yeah, that.
Yeah. And I never wanted to mess around with any sleep meds. That's just never, I think I'm actually pretty cautious when it comes to like trying things. And so with plant medicines, like I never even tried mushrooms until close to the end of college. Whereas I know some people that, tried them in high school, and I, you know, I think as far as other psychedelics, it wasn't even until my more recent adult years, definitely my late 30s, that I started branching out further. So I felt like I had this really steady base. Like I knew, okay, these are things that don't harm me and that help me. But it really took, I think, some maturing over the years. And, you know, because I definitely don't want to say like plant medicines are powerful. They're gentle to the body in a lot of other ways that pharmaceuticals are not. So I think there are great options for like therapeutic use and, you know, other uses, potentially cultural and spiritual uses. But I'm not just saying like carte blanche, like everyone, like, you know, kids and stuff developing brains, that's a whole different matter. And I just know that I turned out okay with some cannabis in the mix as a teen, but I'm not saying, you know, people have different risk factors, so I'm not just writing that off. And I think I took a relatively cautious approach to trying things, middle of the road. I think as far as people I know, I definitely wasn't the most adventurous, if you want to put it that way, risk taker. Although definitely drinking what is normalized, like binge drinking, that's normalized in during the time that I went to college and as kind of a young adult, it was pretty rough. Like what we were doing was, now I look back and I'm pretty horrified.
Still like that. I'll let you know it is still like that. And that culture is really, I don't know, not going to change as long as we look at alcohol as this, you know, a drug that's not even as a drug, right? Like people don't think of alcohol as a drug. When we talk about drugs, you think of what, like people doing drugs in the street, like crack and weed and whatever. Alcohol is a drug, right? And it has so many effects on your body that are not great. You don't want those effects, right? So I hear that you really started using cannabis with intentionality, like later in your life, right? For things like recovery and maybe helping you sleep. Yeah, very cool.
Absolutely.
How did this translate to psychedelics, right? So I know that this is like, you know, as we sort of get along in your career, how did this
Ah, well, when you look at wellness, we have, you have like, when we think about medicine, we're like, medicines, you know, treat illness. So something's wrong and you use a medicine to make that thing better, back to normal. And so like, I think over the years, you know, everyone goes through trauma of different sorts. And so I became interested in sort of helping myself move past some of the things that I'd experienced and grow beyond, you know, and really like move into like a new level of me, if that makes sense. And that's like, you know, it's very related to athletic performance, because your mindset, your mental health, your, you know, your worldview and your approach to taking on those constant challenges that you have as a competitive athlete, that's your world, you know? So anything that supports your wellness is going to ultimately support your performance and your longevity as an athlete. And so I think some of the shift too was me being interested in not just like, oh, how could some of these plant medicines potentially help me heal some things inside myself, but also, even things that, you know, places where I'm sort of middle of the road, how can I, like, how can I grow? How can I become more me? Like, where does my future development potential as a human go? You know, to not just be sort of one thing forever, but to keep growing and expanding who I am. And so in that sense of like positive growth medicine for that, I think that also plant medicines can be really helpful.
Yeah. Once you know, you're doing something for a very long time, kind of like how you did and how most athletes, you know, have a very single-minded goal of this is my sport and I need to be the best at my sport. It's easy to become static, right? you're growing in your skills for sure, but you're static in your mindset, right? Like, this is all I have to do, and this is what there is to me, maybe. So, I mean, we've all, I think, heard the Aaron Rodgers story recently, where he did ayahuasca and then went and won MVP, right, for 2 seasons. So it's your mind-body connection is such a real thing. And especially in sports, right, your mental health plays such a big role in the way that you are on the pitch or on the ice or whatever. So no matter where you are, right, this whole aspect of mental health is so, so, so important. And I personally think that that's something that is now being more addressed, right, in sports and all different realm of sports. But I don't know that maybe it used to be, or even in some, you know, in some circles, talking about your mental health issues is really difficult as an athlete, right? So how was this for you? Like, were you very vocal with the fact that you were using plant medicines, or this is something that you believed in, not necessarily even like, you know, telling people, or how did you feel about it? Like, did you have any feelings towards yourself for being accepting about this?
There's definitely this cultural stigma to fight against, like all the misinformation that's out there and the wrong ideas that people have that are part of the drug war propaganda, you know, just like falsehoods about different plant medicines, different substances. I think so in the later years of my career, I was coming to, you know, at a certain point I accepted like, okay, I'm past the point of being considered for contention and international play or anything like that, where I would be drug tested by WADA. It's really just me enjoying, you know, the rest of my time playing with my club. And so that sort of freed me to feel like I could talk about cannabis openly and become an activist in that space, which is kind of how that started. But when I got the opportunity and the invite to talk about other plant medicines, I took that too, because it feels really good just to be honest. And, you know, players, like people on my team, my friends and close people would know what was going on in my life or different things that I'd done. But I have the sense that a lot of athletes are like that, like, you know, keep it pretty close to your chest. And people who know, but you know, you're not really out there just saying, I did this and this is what it did for me, because there's risks that people, you know, that you could be stigmatized for that honesty. So I think it's really important for like these therapies to move forward, for people to be honest about our experiences. And so that's where athletes really come in as a force for advocacy, just by sharing our stories and saying like, this is what I experienced. And if something helped me, it could help other people. We should have access to this. We should have legal, safe access to these therapies that offer unique properties and effects.
Yeah, agreed. Do you see psychedelics having a bigger role in sports, like moving forward? If, you know, as people like you, as people who were professional athletes, like start speaking out about their experiences. Recently, we've had, you know, a ton of people coming out along with this like psychedelic boom that we're experiencing. People are becoming more honest with what they've done and how psychedelics have helped them, whether that be physically, right? Like, as you mentioned, with recovery and some of those inflammation and some of that, you know, data that we have now about traumatic brain injury, that psychedelics might be really useful in contact sports for those reasons, which is huge, right? Like, especially with TBI. Yeah. So people are becoming much more vocal about it. Do you see psychedelics having a bigger role in sports? And what do you envision for, what's your like utopia for sports?
Well, that's such an interesting question, because I think the future of sports, I feel like we might be on the cusp of some pretty big changes. And I don't know exactly what they'll be, but it feels like we're getting to a tipping point as far as TBI and CTE, the research that's coming out. And this is why I'm an ambassador for the Concussion Legacy Foundation. I mean, I've had head injuries. I have been diagnosed with TBI and I have medical issues from it. And it scares the shit out of me. I'm in my very early 40s, and I sometimes, you know, if I'm struggling to find the right word and my brain doesn't feel like it's as good as it normally is, I get worried. I'm like, am I just having a moment, or is this the beginning of something terrible? Because we see it's not just in football. It's not just the NFL at all. There's data coming from all kinds of other sports, from actually soccer, you know, and heading the ball all the time was something that I did growing up, being a tall player there, you know, and then rugby, of course. There's actually a lawsuit against World Rugby with numerous retired professional players, some of whom are my age and have early onset dementia. Mm-hmm. There's also, I believe, a lawsuit from former amateur players with some of the same issues. And World Rugby is trialing new tackle laws where the legal tackle height would be brought down from the shoulders to the waist, which would really change our sport and the way that it's, you know, refereed and played. It would be a huge change if that goes forward. But when you think about something like that, you think, well, maybe that's what's needed because we didn't know what we were doing to ourselves. And it is truly scary when you look at people who were some of the best in the world at what they did, and then are now unable to function or care for themselves in their early 40s, or even their early 50s. I mean, it shouldn't happen. On the other side of things, there is so much promise around psychedelic therapies for TBI with the neuroplasticity that can happen with these, you know, with various different drugs. And I use drugs in the way of like the neutral scientific way, where it's like a substance that has an effect on the body, not drugs like drugs of abuse, like things you're out doing in the street. You know, medicines is another therapies. It's right. So I'm really excited to see more of that research. And I hope that my own brain can benefit from it. And to be transparent too, I was in a couple car accidents over over the past, I guess, decade. But one that really in 2016, that really was a doozy and left me with symptoms for months and months. And that was really what put an end to me doing MMA, even though I was like old, I was still, you know, and it was really hard for me to get back to rugby. It took at least 6 months before I could really even be, you know, and probably a year to be sort of fully back. And that really scared me too, because you don't want to feel like that every day. And so I have a personal interest in these therapies, as well as thinking that, you know, they can benefit a lot of people beyond just athletes in contact sports.
Yeah, absolutely. So you went through all of these experiences, which are crazy, right? You went through all these experiences, and a lot of them sort of led you to ending certain things like your MMA career. Your MMA and your rugby career that was sort of coming to an end anyway. Do you feel like for you, or maybe for some athletes, after having spent your whole life playing a sport, right? Having been an athlete, and that is sort of your defining, that has defined your life for so, so many years. And then you experience all of these injuries and you sort of have to come out of it. Are you sort of like, who am I now? And do you think that psychedelics can play a role in helping you figure that out?
That's such a good question. Yes. I mean, as athletes, our identities are so wound up in what did I do? Yeah. You know, what did I do today? Yesterday doesn't matter. How, you know, I was great yesterday, but what did I do today? And, you know, the pressure to continue maintaining a level of excellence or pushing further, you know, always to the next. And that's physically not possible at a certain point. We've really stretched, I think, with learning how to take care of our bodies. Athletes are pushing and you know, older and older, having elite careers, we see. But, you know, age comes for us all. So you really, at a certain point, and you know, for some, and that's if you're lucky. A lot of people have devastating injuries that take them out well before then. And so I think the spiritual and personal growth that you can have with some of these plant medicines, for me anyway, has been really key in shifting my mindset. Because when you're not a competitive athlete anymore, thinking, well, what did I do today? I'm nothing if not my output. That's not going to help you love yourself or be happy in life. That's going to help you win, maybe, when you're, you know, it depends on the person, right? We all find our own mental approaches to being competitive. But for me, that's definitely how it was and what kept driving me, you know, a combination of the carrot and the stick, like the thrill of succeeding and achieving and the hunger to win. And then also the fear of failing and losing and those other things. But yeah, as a person, when you want to grow, I think at a certain point that mindset limits you.
Yeah, 100%. Is that scary? Like when you were sort of transitioning out of all of that, I know that you knew about, you know, psychedelics and plant medicine, but was that scary for you? I'm just a little interested.
I'm still transitioning out, I think, honestly. Like it's been about not even 2 years since I played my last match.
That's so recent.
So yeah, so I still, and with the pandemic scrambling everything, time's a little funny, and so it's all just a little, you know, it's still ongoing. But yeah, I think it's just a process of discovering what's going to motivate you and engage you in life, being present, enjoying things fully, and shifting that energy, that life energy that you're directing towards this one thing, this focus for so long, finding other places where it feels good and it nourishes you. So whether that's like learning new skills or pursuits, or connecting with your community in different ways, I think I've found some of those things to be really helpful. Like I'm learning, you know, I've learned how to body surf and free dive living here. And so those are physical things that are challenging and they feel really good. I mean, body surfing will womp you around, but that's, you know, I'm used to it. So, and then things like I recently, this season I coached my local high school boys rugby team and, got a lot of joy out of seeing them enjoy the game, you know? And so, yeah, I think, I don't know if it ever ends. Like, I think I'll still always see myself as a rugby player, in some way, but you know, I don't think anything can replace that. And part of that is like the little grief aspect of like letting go of that time in your life. And some of that is letting go of like your youth or your wellness, like, oh, back before my back was injured, or, you know, these different things of like life's this way now and it used to be this way. And that's what happens. It's part of letting go
and change for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. And psychedelics are notoriously helpful for learning how to let go, in ways that, you know, where it's more peaceful, more, you know, less painful maybe, or working through those pains.
Yeah. Navigating those sort of moments of transition. And as you mentioned before, doing something that helps you maybe reach a different chapter of your life a little bit more easily, right? And grow into whatever your next role is going to be. And you've obviously been super, super, super involved in, you know, everything. And you're now the director of the Etheridge Foundation. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your role in that? And then also Athletes for Care, which I think very nicely ties in with everything that we've been maybe talking about.
Yeah, I'd love to. Well, the Etheridge Foundation is a nonprofit founded by the legendary, iconic rock star musician Melissa Etheridge. And it was sadly, the Etheridge Foundation came about because of a tragedy. Melissa lost her son Beckett to opioids. And, you know, after years of him struggling with dependence and addiction, you know, he passed away in 2020. So it's been, you know, at this point, it's been less than 3 years. And so in the wake of that devastation for her family, Melissa channeled her grief into this organization that exists to fund research into plant medicine treatments for opioid use disorder. You know, we know that the opioid crisis is still raging, and just current treatments are not effective enough. She saw that firsthand with her son, you know, where they have good resources and they could send them to the best places, but those treatments were not working, and they don't work for so many people. The relapse rates are astronomical. And so we know that what we really need is new treatments. And psychedelic therapies are especially promising. A lot of these plant medicines are really transformative because they have biochemical mechanisms that help to weaken the cycle of addiction. But they also take the person on a mental, emotional, sometimes spiritual journey as well. They go through this process that is therapeutic as well. So those two things together are a unique feature, I guess, of a lot of these traditional plant medicines, or in some cases, newer psychedelic therapies. So we see all the promise that's there, and yet there's still the stigma blocking these therapies for being accessible to most people. So we, you know, at the Etheridge Foundation, we exist to help fund that research, help advocate for legal, safe, and widespread access to these effective therapies, and then to help educate people, the public, policymakers, to let them know, you know, that these therapies exist, that they're effective, why they're effective, and also, you know, the urgency of having better resources available for people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, opioid dependence is something that I imagine is really big in, you know, the athletic space, because that's one of the first things that people are prescribed a lot of the times is, oh, you hurt yourself, you hurt your ankle. Okay, here's an opiate and we'll deal with it and you'll keep playing and you'll be fine, right?
Yes.
So easy to become dependent on this. And a lot of the misinformation around psychedelic assisted psychotherapies for things like addiction is people will say, well, how are you going to fight an addiction to a drug with another drug, right? So again,
Right.
it goes right back to that whole misinformation sort of aspect, right? And
Yes.
just imagine, like, okay, so this is a question for you. Like, imagine that you are a young athlete, right? In a professional sport, you're professionally playing a sport, and you might be experiencing injuries, or you might be mentally going through a tough time. You know, sports are tough and life happens as you're playing these sports and you still have to focus and you still have to do whatever you're doing. What would life have been like for you, or do you imagine for other people, if these were available or if this was an option, right? Like if this was something that was introduced to you, you know, maybe in the staff room, right? Like the coaches are even telling you, like, hey, if you're having trouble, like this is available to you, right? Which it's probably going to be years and years, 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 years down the line. But like, just imagine, like, what do you think the impact of that could have been on you, on people that you know, or, you know, like anyone in professional sports?
I think there's tremendous potential for, I think, even just if you look at the standpoint of mitigating head injuries and like long-term damage, if we had treatments, you know, for that, if you, I think there's a lot of potential there, to almost like repair more as you go on. Whereas, like, I feel, you know, coming to the end of the career, it's like, oh, I have a backlog of stuff wrong with me,
Now
everything from, you
let's
know,
do it.
scar tissue in my shoulders to head knocks. And yeah, so instead of like waiting till the end and saying, now I'm gonna go big, maybe you could have more small, subtle therapies, including not just psychedelics, but cannabinoids, which have neuroprotective effects. And there's a lot of potential utility there. So protecting the brain, and helping heal as you go along. And then also on looking on the other side to optimize and things like mental health. Like I, you know, we look at issues like anxiety and depression, and they're so prevalent. I think that's just, to me, that's a human condition. Like, we all go through those things sometimes. Some people, of course, go through like a very severe version of those things. And so it really depends on the person. But for a lot of people, you know, we've dealt with like moderately severe bouts of anxiety, depression, and mental health struggles. I think expanding the resources that are available for people to find things that work for them. You know, so many people have found more breakthrough type healing with psychedelic therapies and plant medicines than, you know, just talk therapy. For me, you know, I've dealt with things like grief. You know, that's another very universal human experience. And when I was younger, I lost a friend very suddenly in very traumatic circumstances. And going to therapy didn't do a lot for me, unfortunately. It was just like a room that I cried in for an hour a week. And it was an outlet, I guess, but you know, it felt like I was just struggling to even get my head above water. It didn't really feel like I was moving anywhere. But I have found that later down the road, reapproaching that grief with the help of plant medicines has been much more transformative for me. Like, to really get into it and process it and feel like you can come out the other side of it a little bit more. So I think, you know, I think the possibilities are many. And I think there are safe ways to do this. It's not like we're going to blast everyone to the moon on some big trip. And, you know, it's not one size fits all. It's very personalized to what you need, what you're going through, what your own individual history is, like your life history, your genetics, you know, your family background, and your susceptibility to different particular things. And so we just need the ability to study these medicines and therapies openly, without stigma, without government, you know, Schedule One blocking things. It's just, you know, a lot of potential and a lot of frustration that we're being held back for no real good reason.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, that scheduling thing is something that I can totally, as someone in academia, as someone in science, is one of like the most frustrating things to deal with, right? Like, how are we supposed to understand all of these things if we can't, first of all, access them? But the biggest hurdle in the way of exploring psychedelic, like things like psychedelic assisted psychotherapy, maybe in the realm of sports, is also misinformation, right? And you mentioned cannabinoids. Cannabinoids can also be so useful for things like pain management in a way that's not addictive, right? So there's a lot of small things that can also happen before, you're right, like we sit everyone down and we're like, we're all gonna, you know, take a Tylenol or something. So there's, I think, so much room, right, for growth and so many little things that people can be doing. And I think individuals like you who are speaking out about this stuff and advocating is what we need right now. And that's, I think, where it all starts, right? So I think, and I hope the stigma, especially around cannabis, right? We've gone through the whole like up and down and like plateaued with cannabis becoming legalized, like almost in a, you know, I'm not gonna say everywhere, but in a lot of states, right? And cannabis use being a little less scary. But there we run the risk of now completely swinging the pendulum all the way to the other end, right? Like, everyone should do it, and cannabis are for everyone, or like weed is for everyone, which is also not true, right? You mentioned people can have own their own personal histories, and psychedelics are not for everyone, right? And that's a really, really like fine line that everyone has to sort of teeter around, I think. But I think that the work that you do really just helps with all of this stuff. And do you foresee yourself, I don't know, continuing on in all of this for as long as you can?
Absolutely. I'm really, really passionate about what we're doing with the Etheridge Foundation, and it absolutely dovetails with the other activism, you know, groups that I happily represent like Last Prisoner Project, which is focused on justice for people who've been in prison for cannabis, and freeing them, helping them restore their lives. And then also Athletes for Care, which has been an advocacy organization for really, you know, kind of breaking the stigma, and athletes speaking out, just telling the truth about our own experiences so that more people, not just athletes in leagues, because that's one focus, like, hey, leagues, change your rules around cannabis, around other plant medicines, but also more broadly, like, you know, these things should be legal. They help us, they heal us. There's no reason for them, you know, to be Schedule I controlled substances. So that all really ties in. You know, I think athletes are very susceptible to opioid use disorder. We're prescribed, you know, we get a lot of injuries. We get a lot of chronic injuries. There's plenty of things in my body that will never, ever be the same again. And that's just part of life. And that's part of, you know, the choices you make. But we know that opioids are not effective for chronic pain. And yet they, you know, have been used that way. And they've led a lot of people to develop opioid use disorder. And athletes, because of our, you know, our pain tolerance, and maybe because of the way our bodies respond to, you know, chemicals in them, like, I think that we are maybe particularly susceptible to
dependence. You know, it's like also a mindset, the mindset that,
right,
as an athlete, I think there's a level of like perfectionism that everyone needs to have, right? Like that I need to like, how do I need to deal with this, right? To move on. Like, this is an issue to help with. So I think also psychological.
Yeah. Right. For sure. Like optimization, ultimate, complete, everything, full human potential being utilized. But, but is it, you know, or what are we doing to ourselves, and what are the downsides? And that, you know, speaking on panels with other athletes, I heard so many people open up, from professional cyclists to soccer players to MMA fighters to NFL players to NBA players, talk about developing a dependence on opioids, and how cannabis helped them to wean off or completely stop using opioids for pain management and, you know, whatever else they were serving, and have a better quality of life overall, like be far more healthy, active, and functioning. Because athletes, you know, we retire from our sport at a young age, generally speaking, and then we have the rest of our lives ahead. We want to be functioning physically, mentally, emotionally, and we deserve to, you know? And so part of it is helping each other, saying, hey, friend, in my situation, or, you know, a younger version maybe coming up the pathway, here's what I did. Here's things I wouldn't do again. Here's things I would do and do earlier, or do, you know, a certain way. And then also for people who aren't athletes, it's the same, you know, the same sort of thing applies. It's like a particular set of extreme circumstances almost, but it applies to general life too, and people who have pain for all kinds of reasons.
So this might be, I guess you'll have to speak from your own personal experience, but do you feel like when you're playing a sport, it's more prioritized your health, like in the moment, right? Like we have a game in 2 days and you have this injury, we're going to give you all these opioids, or we're going to do the X, Y, and Z to get you ready for this game. And then once we get there, we'll reassess. Or is it more holistic and like looking at your health more long-term, right?
I wish I could say it was the second one, but I think, unfortunately, I think that most organizations, coaching staffs, and players ourselves are focused on the short term, so to speak, or like the next thing, or maybe even a season goal.
I
once took indomethacin, which is a really powerful prescription anti-inflammatory, for about 6 weeks, because I had fractured my foot, but I wanted to play in the national championship, and I needed to keep training at a certain level. I couldn't train all the way. I was probably at like maybe 65% capability, but I did it, and we did really well that year. So I was really happy to be a part of it and contribute to that. I still, like, I made important contributions, but you know, so would I change that? Going back in time, if I would have had the option to try like a really high CBD for, you know, anti-inflammatory effects, I would have tried that instead of having, you know, I started, my stomach started bleeding and some of those other side effects from, yeah. So it's bad. That's bad. You should have, you know, and who knows, hopefully there's nothing long-term, but that's just one example among, you know, various ones of like the trade-offs, you know. And even when you think about something like head injuries, there's like a much more growing awareness, but, and it's something, honestly, now coaching youth myself, I have struggled with this a little bit, because when I ask myself questions about my own health and I don't know the answers, you know, this is a sport that I love, that's given me so much joy, and I want to share that with, you know, the next generation. But I also don't want to expose them to harm. Mm-hmm. And there's risks in life, you know, whether playing a sport always has risks, walking, you know, driving down the road has risks. That's life. But as we start to know more about specifically brain injuries and brain health, I think I'm going to be faced with some tough questions about how do I approach, especially kids, playing this game that I love so much. And so it's really hard. Like,
I know where that line is, right? Like drawing that line for yourself. And then imagine at the level of like a league that, you know, the bottom line is to make money. Like this is a sport and it's also entertainment, right? Like where do we draw the line? And I think a big part of it is just like, you know, having to have a break point to stop and reassess, right? There was a point where people didn't wear helmets, right? Like there was like no protective gear in like a lot of sports, but then at some point everyone reassessed and was like, maybe helmets and some protective gear is smart now because we know more. So I think fair, right? That there hasn't been change so far, but now we're learning more and now we know more. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, changing the mindset is going to be very difficult, and it's, you know, and it's sports, right? And you're right. Everything has risk. Like every sport is going to have a risk. Like you can't play football without tackling people. You can't play rugby without tackling people, right? Like it's just part of the sport, right? Like, oh,
well, There is touch rugby, which is one of my other side sports. So you can actually, and it's really fun. It's really fun. There's, you know, you can play all ages, men's, women's, co-ed divisions. But even then it's a sport, you know, I know somebody, a really good player who got a concussion because, you know, collided with somebody else. They were running, you know, at playing touch rugby. So it's not without risk, but it's definitely a much lower risk. So you can, and that's a great sport. It's, you know, it's a separate sport, obviously, than my regular contact rugby. Yeah. And that's my first love. So that some of it is reconciling. How do I, this thing that I love, I mean, do I need to let go of that in a way? Do I need to recognize that all of the joy and the aliveness of it that I experienced came at a cost to me and maybe to other people, you know, that I was playing with and against, like, what are the costs? And that's what we don't know enough about. But I think like the indicators we're starting to get are they're worrying, right? And so we have to, there's so much resistance from the money-making entities that could have liability for this, and they don't want to see their revenue go down or away. But ethically, people deserve to know what the realistic risks are. And that's what we're still trying to determine. So instead of like blocking research or trying to deny it or refute it, these organizations really owe a duty to athletes to be supporting genuine objective research into brain health.
Well, a couple of years, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think you might have been involved in this. The NFL gave $500,000 to UCSD mm-hmm. to look into CBD, I think CBD, in pain management or maybe cannabis.
Cannabis. Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, I was a part of designing that study, and I'm still in contact with the research team that's working on it. They've identified a group of elite level rugby players that they'll be, conducting clinical trials of cannabis used in a realistic manner, for pain management. And so that's a step forward. It's, of course, research takes a long time. So it's like,
Ever.
can we get everything faster? But I have a lot of excitement still about that study and ones like it. That same NFL grant also funded a study in Canada around cannabis for TBI.
Oh, I love
So that, there's just good things going on, and I really am excited to see some of that data start to come out. Because yeah, I don't think it's enough to just say, okay, well, we'll stop doing this and this, but like, what about the people who already have all this damage? How do we help heal people to be functional
Yeah.
and healthy?
Part of that is like a responsibility, right? Like you have made money off of this athlete for years, right? Like these are still people. And once they leave, is it your responsibility to help? That's like gray territory. And again, it's like money questions, but I think, research like this is so, when I came across this, I was so excited about it because again, like this is an actual tangible move in the right direction, right? Like understanding what we can do to help athletes now and then in the future when they're maybe done with the sport. So very exciting. So I don't know. I think I've sort of run out of questions for you. Do you have any questions for me? And you don't have to. That's okay too.
Yeah,
We've had quite a chat.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head,
Okay.
but yeah, thank you for all the thoughtful and interesting questions.
Yeah, I mean, you have led such an interesting life and you are still doing such amazing work. So it was an honor and a pleasure to speak with you. And I hope that we can stay in contact. And everyone listening, if you guys enjoyed this chat, which I hope you did, please let us know. And we can definitely, ask Anna some more questions, maybe in the future. We'll see. But thank you so much for joining us today. With that, everyone listening, please subscribe and stay in the loop for the next few episodes because this series is going to be ongoing and it's my personal pa passion project. I'm very, very excited about this. So thank you everyone for listening. Thank you so much, Anna, for being with us today. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.